David Dye, this is The World Cafe. We continue our Moog-inspired show today. Last hour, we heard artists who played at Moogfest. This hour, a lot of music with the synthesizer, including this. I had to play this from Wendy Carlos, who was Walter Carlos, when he released the multi-tracked Switched on Bach album, which became, at the time, the best-selling classical record and was... had a bit of controversy because it was recorded on the synthesizer, but this is probably the first thing you heard on the Moog. This is Sinfonia to Cantata No. 29 by Bach from Switched on Bach. Sinfonia to Cantata No. 29, Wendy Carlos, Walter Carlos at the time, from Switched on Bach. This hour, I'm going to play you excerpts from my conversation in Asheville at Moogfest with Michelle Moog-Cusa, the daughter of Robert Moog, the inventor of the synthesizer in 1964. He died in 2005. In this portion, we find out how Asheville, North Carolina, became the center for Moogfest and the Bob Moog Memorial Foundation.
My father worked for Moog Music up in Buffalo through 1978, and he left the company at that time, and we moved down here then. He had he and my mom had come down here to visit a friend of theirs and just fell in love with the area. And I think my dad knew he was going to be leaving the company, and they wound up buying a piece of land here. And so we moved in the summer of 1978 and out to about 100 acres of land at the end of a long, windy country road where it was very quiet and beautiful. And my parents built a 16-sided roundhouse on the property, and that's the connection. My parents just absolutely loved this area.
Your father passed away in 2005, mm-hmm. and was the foundation an idea before his death? Or because so much has happened in the last 5 years. You've just done so much with this.
It was an idea very close to the end of his life. And I'll tell you what the origins are, because they're pretty spectacular, actually. When he was ill, he wanted to keep in touch with about 40 people, 40 friends. And my brother, Matthew, wound up setting up a page on thecaringbridge.com, which is a site for critically ill people where you can journal out, people can leave guest book entries, and it's a way to communicate without the phone ringing off the hook all the time and tiring people out. And it was supposed to be kind of discreet. My brother shared the link with these 40 people. One of the person didn't realize it was discreet, because we were trying to keep my father's condition kind of private. And this person posted the link on a synthesizer chat group. And we got 1,000 hits in a day. And my brother got pretty upset and threw up a password. And after a couple days, my dad really surprised us, because he really cherished his privacy, and he said, you know what, just take the password down. Just let him come. And between, I think it was July 7th and August 20th, about 7 weeks, 60,000 people logged onto that site. And the day he died, 20,000 people logged on. And as a little bit of a backstory, my dad was really humble about his work. He didn't bring it home very much. He was my dad to us, and we knew that there was this kind of super accomplishment that he had in his career, but we weren't confronted with it very much. But with the outpouring of support through the numbers, but also in the guest book entries, there were about 4,000 people who left guest book entries, and the basic theme was Bob Moe gave me my voice for my creativity. And when you read that, I would go home every night after taking care of him and read that. It was really, really overwhelming. But at the end, when you're processing it all, you realize what a huge impact this person had on the world. And that's really where the foundation was born. It was born from knowing that Bob had this incredible impact, and that's something that we wanted to carry forward to future generations.
Michelle Moog, we will hear more of my conversation with her at Moogfest 2010 in just a bit. Here's an artist that actually didn't play at Moogfest, although they were the scheduled headliner for good reason, because Devo did a lot to certainly popularize the synthesizer. Bob Mothersbaugh had a thumb injury, so the band could not play. But we can play this from Are We Not Men? I Can't Get No Satisfaction. Thank you. Stereo Lab. That's Miss Modular from Dots and Loops. Gary Newman's Cars and I Can't Get No Satisfaction, the Devo tune from Are We Not Men. Some great synthetic music. More of our conversation with Michelle Moog, who is very much involved with the Moog Foundation in Asheville, North Carolina. And more Moog music coming up here on the World Cafe. Back to my conversation with Michelle Moog-Cusa. Michelle is Bob Moog's daughter and founder and executive director of the Bob Moog Foundation. Robert Moog invented the first commercially available synthesizer in 1964. He died in 2005. This interview was recorded at Moogfest at the end of October, in fact, over the Halloween weekend.
Of course, the history of electronic music really accelerated with his synthesizer and the portability of it and all that went on after that. I was trying to figure out how old you would have been when that happened, and if you could kind of watch his excitement as things really took off and so many different musicians of so many different styles embraced this. Because it wasn't a given to begin with, I would think.
No, it was not. And as a matter of fact, I think it caught him by surprise. And I was actually talking to one of the engineers today, Bill Hemsath, who was with him in 1969. Mm. And he said, you know, we all thought it would be used just for experimental music or just for jingles and maybe some kind of quasi-classical applications. But we had no idea it would get into the pop or rock realm. So it was a surprise. You know, when the Moog synthesizer really made a breakthrough was with Switched on Bach in 1968-69, and I was born that year in 1968, so I didn't see the evolution quite so much. By the time I was aware enough to be observing my father, it was actually in the years that probably weren't his happiest years at Moog Music. It's when someone had bought out the company, then a big corporation took over, and his work about life was very, very different. I do know, though, that you know the happiest part of his work was working with musicians.
Well, which brings us to Moogfest, and there have been previous gatherings in New York City, and I know elsewhere, which were called Moogfest, but they were much smaller. And what an exciting thing to be able to do that here. And what's the evolution of this? How long have you been working on actually putting this together?
Well, I've been working on it with AC Entertainment for a few years. We've been talking about it. But I do have to give about 90% or 95% credit for Moogfest to AC Entertainment. They're really the ones who are putting this on, and we are certainly partnering with those with them. The foundation is doing all the workshops, panels, and discussions that'll happen at the Moogaplex during the day. But AC is putting it on. It's been fascinating to watch it evolve because I did participate some in the other Moogfests that were in New York City, and as you say, they were much smaller. But to see this particular festival just grow kind of to epic proportions has been really extraordinary and quite humbling for me personally.
So does everybody have to play a Moog?
No, they don't. I don't think that is a qualification. I've had a little bit of back and forth with Ashley Capps of AC Entertainment about that. You know, that was not even in Bob Moog's spirit. Well, you know, in the end, if we just look at it from a macro level, Bob Moog was interested in making synthesis accessible to musicians. It just so happens that Moog Music makes incredible instruments to do that, but that there are other instruments or capabilities out there as well, and they're accessed through computers now. So I know that Bob felt that digital music did have was not as good as analog sound.
Figured we'd eventually get to an analog-digital discussion.
Right. He definitely believed that, but I know that he saw the evolution. There's no stopping it. And I think the focus of this festival is on creativity. So, and you know, the software certainly allows for that.
Michelle Moog recorded at Moogfest over Halloween. Back to some more music with synthesizer. On this, Herbie Hancock actually plays an ARP Odyssey synth. recorded in 1973 in one of the biggest jazz albums ever, Herbie Hancock's Chameleon from Headhunters.
I'm
Higher Ground, Stevie Wonder from Inner Visions, and Chameleon from Herbie Hancock from Headhunters. A couple more synthetic tunes. We got a lot more Moog coming up, including the first use of the Moog synthesizer in pop music and my conversation with Michelle Moog. It's coming up on the World Cafe. I'm going to get to the conclusion of my interview with Michelle Moog-Cusa. Michelle is Robert Moog's daughter and founder and executive director of the Bob Moog Foundation. Robert Moog invented the first commercially available synthesizer in 1964. He died in 2005. This interview was recorded with Michelle at Moog Fest over Halloween weekend. And the Bob Moog Foundation hopes to build a Moogseum in Asheville. Robert was an inventor, but also a musician.
Now, he was a musician, but I understand it wasn't until recently that we've actually been able to hear. He did it privately. Playing?
He really didn't. He didn't.
He didn't play?
He didn't play much.
Yeah.
He took piano lessons for 14 years. He went to the Manhattan School of Music. He was quite good, not good enough to go professional, but he was quite good. But he never considered himself a musician. And he would always say very adamantly, I'm not a musician. I'm a tool maker. I make tools for musicians. He did play the piano every once in a while at home. And very rarely, I can only think of three occasions myself, he performed live.
But there's a recording.
There is, that we just released with a local musician named Dan Lewis, Bob Moog Live, which is Bob Moog performing with two local musicians at the Asheville Art Museum. He's playing the Mini Moog. It's neoclassical music, and I think it was just a situation where people just asked, hey, would you join us? And he said, sure, yeah, I'll play with you guys, which is unbelievable considering how hesitant he was even to play the piano at home. But it was also in a period of his life where he wasn't working. He was a little bit looser. He was, you know, kind of enjoying himself.
So tell me a little bit about the Moogseum. Is it extant now? What are the plans for it?
It is a vision right now. We are in the very early planning stages. We have gotten our first grant. We got a $600,000 grant from the Buncombe County Tourism Development Authority. That is our lead grant, but it's going to take at least a few more million dollars to get to the point where we can build. Even that grant we can only access when we are actually building. So given the economy the way it is, it's been a little difficult to, you know, not only sustain our day-to-day operations, but to build something like that. So we are working towards that in small steps, but we're looking in the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, that grant seems to indicate that Asheville has really embraced this.
They really have, and we're so grateful for that. I think they recognize the power of the Moog name and just the asset that the Moogseum would be to the historical, educational, and music communities, not only here, but throughout the world.
So if I'm reading it right, your dad's favorite music was classical. Is that accurate?
I don't think so.
Really?
You know, I have to say, when we were in the car, which is really one of the few times I heard him actually listening to music, he did listen to classical. Mm-hmm. NPR is his favorite. And but he enjoyed all types of music as long as it was, as he would say, damn good music. So he appreciated fine musicianship really across genres.
Again, our thanks to Michelle Moog for spending time with us at Moog Fest 2010. And now, the first time that the Moog synthesizer was used on a record album by a pop band, believe it or not, it was the Monkees. Mickey Dolenz actually bought the third one produced by Robert Moog. The other two were owned by Walter Wendy Carlos and Buck Owens. Can you believe that? Anyway, this is the piece they use it on. They're really just kind of playing around. It is a Mike Nesmith song called Daily Nightly, the Monkees. La Femme d'Argent, that is Air, also Daily Nightly, the first use of the Moog synthesizer on a pop record, on that tune called Daily Nightly from Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones Limited by the Monkees. Here's some synth from the band that is our World Cafe Next artist this week. It is Tongue. This is from their album, And Then We Saw Land. This is called Sashimi. Sashimi from Tongue, finishing up our Moog-dominated show today on the World Cafe, where support is provided in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and also by the members of our World Cafe affiliates nationwide, including WFUV in New York and ETV Radio in South Carolina. Show's produced at WXPN from the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm David Dye. Thanks for listening. This is the World Cafe from NPR.